All right, good morning or good afternoon. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good afternoon. It is March 11, 2024. Special day here on the East Coast. Hope it's great wherever you are at, especially windy. It's like a hurricane. Last night was crazy. Thought the house was coming down. But we did survive. A little of that left over today. The winds are blowing, but I think we're going to get through it. I do hope everyone's having a great day. It is Monday. Back to the grind. I thought I would come by. Had to do some stuff today, some errands, and catch up on a few things. I thought I would swing by and see if I could possibly do a podcast. I have nothing prepared. I have nothing but what's inside the space between my two ears. And but sometimes there's some good stuff in there. We can take a look, get the flashlight out and start walking around, see what's in there. You know, one of the things about this podcast that I find is very interesting is I have a lot of people reach out to me who are not alcoholics, right? Alcoholic. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were telling me a story about somebody, and I said to them, I go, I'm an alcoholic. And they're like, you're an alcoholic? I go, I am. I've been sober 15 years, but I still am labeled an alcoholic, right? I'm still an alcoholic. And I've always found that, you know, I'm not here to change anything. I'm not here to rewrite the book or anything, but it is weird to be an alcoholic and not drink, right? But I was at a meeting the other day, and this guy's like, you know, it's all those isms. And it is alcoholism. And so I am fine with that. I do, I wouldn't want to be called anything else, right? I do identify as a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. That does help me a little bit to remind myself what my true issue is, because, like, I haven't had a drink. Actually, I haven't had a drink for 17 years, and which is kind of amazing, right? It still blows me away that it's 17 years I have not poured alcohol into my mouth. And to think the day before that I could not stop pouring alcohol into my mouth, right? That the being basically possessed by a devil, right? And it's sort of what it is. That's what I feel. That's how I look at it today. There's no other explanation than it's just a demonic possession. And when it gets in you, if you have the gene, right? Doesn't happen to everybody, but if you have the gene and that alcohol goes into you, man, it is like opening the gates of hell. But that's what I am. I'm an alcoholic, and I suffer from alcoholism, and it is the isms. But I just think it's funny. I have, you know, I've had several conversations with people that listen to this podcast that aren't, you know, alcoholics. One I definitely know isn't an alcoholic. I definitely have a friend I don't know. And who am I to say, right? I know some of my heaviest, darkest drinking days were alone, privately. And I don't think anybody realized how much alcohol actually went down my throat, right? Because I would, you know, I'd pretend I'd go to my parents and have a couple beers, or I'd hang out with people and have a couple beers. But once I was alone and by myself, right, that's when the true drinking, the true alcoholic for what I am would show up.
Walking down this rocky road, wondering where my life is leading, rolling on to the bitter end. Finding out along the way what it takes to keep love living. You should know how it feels, my friend. Love. feet again. Better things are bound to happen. All my dues surely must be paid. Many miles and many tears. Times were hard, but now they're changing. You should know that I'm not afraid.
I am not afraid. What a great song. Bad Company, Ready for Love. Are you ready for love? I think that was the first thing I asked myself when I got sober, because I can tell you, the people I was hanging out with early on in my behavior, there was no lovable people, right? You know, I've talked about coming back, you know, getting back into the program and just wanting to catch up, and whether it was through business, through education, or through love, right? You know, I think when we live in that sort of existence like I did, the people who live down there aren't that great, right? And no fault of their own, right? We all have choices and opportunities to dig ourselves out. But I remember back in those days, I wasn't digging my choices, right? I remember dating a girl, and we went out, and then, you know, we drank like I drank, right? And I remember, I think I've even said this, she sat in a chair and for some reason flipped over, hit her head on the wall. Drunk, right? Hammered, right? Because we'd been drinking. We'd been drinking like I like to drink. And she stood up. She goes, I can't do this, and walked out. And never to be seen again. And good job. That's probably the smartest thing she ever did, right? But that's the life I lived. And so getting sober, you know, the first thing it is, I'm better, right? I'm better, and now I am opening up my options, right, to better people. The problem is I wasn't quite better between the ears, and I remember the first relationship that I got into sober was with a great person, right? Just a normal, like I say, it takes a lot of work to be normal, right? And from where I was looking up from, right, which is down at the bottom, this person looked amazing. Turns out this person was just living a normal life, but I was like, you know, I'm back, right? And I remember being in a relationship with this person and just questioning everything, right? She doesn't like me. Where's she going? How come she, you know, she can't like me, right? Just complete insecurity, tortured, right? Always wondering, when's it going to end? When's it going to end? There's no way that this could continue because she's going to figure out I'm a piece of garbage, right? Just not ready for that type of relationship. You know, they said to me and they said to others, and it has been said, right? Don't do anything big for the first year. And we all probably look and say, yes, of course not, right? But then first thing I did is I got to college, right? I got into a relationship. I did all of the things I was told not to do because on the outside I was better, right? The dents had popped out. The dirt had been washed off, right? The smell was gone. Whatever it was that we had was gone. But inside I was still a piece, I'm not going to say garbage. I was very, 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 very immature. I think I got sober at 36. I think when initially I got sober. No, wait a minute. When I first got sober, I think it was like 28. But around this time, I think I was in my 30s, and I just was probably, you know, I had the maturity of a 15-year-old kid, right? Just like back in high school. I remember my last girlfriend when I was in high school, right? Horrible relationship, insecure, fighting, accusations, you know, all the shit that teenage relationships go through. I was feeling that same way as an adult in my first relationship into recovery. And, you know, and eventually all of the things that I thought were going to come true came true, right? She broke up with me, right? And she said it. You're not good enough. I think that's actually what she said. This, you know, perfectly fine human being, but she, you know, she was the kind of person that had a plan, and she was planning out her life, and she knew what needed to be in place for the plan to take place, and she knew that me being in the plan wasn't going to help. And I was working, right? I had a decent job, but, you know, she was looking for some more money, and hey, to each his own. And we broke up, and I just remember I was devastated because for some reason I based my quality as a human on that relationship. Like, look at me. I'm dating her. I must be better, right? Look, see? She likes me, right? She thinks I'm pretty cool, so I must be better. And then when she left, I was back to the Tom that I had started off as. And, you know, unfortunately that night, though, that all happened, I ended up grabbing hold of somebody and didn't let go, right? Did not let go, and ended up having a relationship with this person, ended up, you know, in a marriage, right, having a child, and then at some point realizing, Tom, you're not a very good person, because I used this person, right? I took advantage so I would feel better, because nothing is worse for me in my life at that time, and I think for a lot of people, than loneliness, right? Nobody likes to be alone. And that night that relationship ended, I grabbed onto this person, not because, you know, I cared for her or liked what she said or her personality. I just did not want to be alone. And I held on until that pain stopped. And then fortunately or unfortunately, I mean, I don't have any regrets. Her and I have a great relationship as far as parents of a child. We have a wonderful son. And, you know, I do, you know, when she left me, right, because she did leave me because I started drinking again, because it was all a lie, right? I had been working a program supposedly, but I hadn't addressed any of this. I didn't start figuring this stuff out till way after. A hard look at myself. What role did I play in these things? And even saying it right now, it's sort of embarrassing. And, you know, I have a little bit of shame about it because luckily everybody's good. But, you know, that could have been, you know, a real issue. And I did not consider anybody else but myself in those times. And so, but, you know, the point is that, you know, when it did end, right, and she did leave, you know, I was like, I can't believe she did that, right? I can't, right? And what would end up later happening is I would have to make an amends, not only for drinking, but for all that I did, right? And at the time, it didn't seem like that was something I would need to be doing, right? Because she left, and that's her fault, right? But we get better, right? And we want to get better, and we want to stay better, and we want to feel better, and we don't want to live with these things. You know, I was talking to another friend of mine this morning, and I'm like, it's all fear, right? I don't want to live with the fear that I have left that wound open, right? There's nothing worse to me than an open wound relationship, right? And there's nothing worse than an open wound in somebody else's relationship that I have nothing to do with, right? I still want to try to even be like, hey, you should fix that, right? I have a client, her and her mother haven't spoken. I'm like, you need to fix that, right? I don't even like that open wound. And so, you know, what reminded me of all this is I was talking to a friend of mine who had a relationship that ended. And it was cordial and it seemed fine. But, you know, this person's like, you know, I'm still struggling with it, right? And, you know, I think from the outside, we would all look at the end of that relationship and say, man, you kind of got done dirty. But, you know, when I was talking to this person today, I'm like, you know, even I had to, you know, when relationships ended and I felt like I was in the right and this person was in the wrong, turns out later on, I had to really go and make some amends because I want to move on, right? I don't want to live in, I don't want to be a victim of it, right? I don't want to be a victim of a bad relationship that ended, honestly, my fault, right? But for a long time, I've sort of thought it was their fault. And so I've sort of felt like a victim. But when I finally took a hard look at this and realized, yeah, I think this might all be your fault, me, meaning me, I had to make some amends, right? And I had to clean it up because I don't want to be a victim of that anymore. And I want to find peace. And I think when I was discussing this with the person, they're like, I don't know, right? And I'm like, I know it sounds weird, right? And, you know, I've always said if my feet were there, I played a role. Even in situations where I actually was the good person, right, in the stand-up person, at some point, I don't know, even if I just the cynicism, is it cynicism? What is it? The when two things mix, right, and create something else, right? Even me coming into this relationship and interacting with this person, if maybe that created the craziness, I still have to, you know, make an amends and clean it up. Like, I'm sorry I even was there. I'm sorry I was even born, right? I apologize. I just don't want to drag this around. And, you know, talking to the person, you know, I don't recall. I recall this person having, you know, being a stellar person in a relationship, right? So I wouldn't say that this person was at fault. But like I said, we all play a role some way, right? And I think it's more important to realize it isn't important whose fault it is. It's important for me to realize, regardless, I know I was there, right? I know I was there. Whether it's my fault or I could have done a better job, whatever, I'm sorry, right? I'm sorry that this is what happened and everybody seems happy. And that's good, but for me to move on and clean it up, right, I get to say, hey, I am sorry. And, you know, sometimes that person would be surprised, oh, my God, really? Or sometimes they're like, it's about time, right? Sometimes I can be so oblivious, so focused on self that I don't realize how I hurt people, right? And so... but that's how, you know, that's what this program does. And this person I was talking to isn't an alcoholic, right? This is just a human, right? The problem with alcoholism for me is, unfortunately, I had to get my ass kicked, right? To get to a place where I become willing and available to learn this stuff, because I always have that dark cloud somewhere, right? I can see it. It's there. It's easily accessible. All I have to do is start doing the things I'm not supposed to do, and the next thing you know, I'm headed where I'm headed. I do not want that to happen again, right? But people that aren't alcoholics, right, they're just, you know, they're like interested. Like, wow, this is interesting, right? This is because I think even, I think we all struggle, right? I think we all suffer a bit. And it's nice when you can find something that you can learn from and grow from and try to be better, right? And so that's the cool thing about this this program. I'm lucky, right, because I actually did get my ass kicked, and I am open to the idea of, I am aware that if I do not address this, I could drink again. I've proven it. I've done it, right? That's why I had to make that amends. That's why that relationship, you know, I mean, that was the main reason that she, you know, walked out, is because I came home drunk. And I woke up to the empty house, and of course there was amends to be made, but, you know, I had to make the amends for doing that. And then I also had to make an amends for sort of taking her hostage, right? I remember my buddy Matt used to say, I take people hostage. And I'm like, oh my God, that's psycho. And what he meant was, is that he brings people into his life to satisfy this lonely or fear of being alone or not good enough. And, you know, and you feel better doing it. Right. But at the expense of what? You know, at another person, right? This person's like, oh my gosh, whatever the situation is, they are probably under the idea that this is legit and it's heartfelt and it's forever. And a lot of the times it's just, you know, a short period just to feel better and not be full of fear. And that was what I was full of. And still, you know, I like coming on podcasts, talk about fear and how I'm free of it. I still have fear, right? There's still fear. I have tons of things in my life that are still sort of scary, and I have to live in the day and remind myself, but I'm not tortured by them, right? I'm not tortured by them. And that, to me, I think is what's most important. But it's all, you know, and the other thing I was wanting to talk about was this next step, which is a sixth step. And I talked about this the other day, and it's an interesting step because it talks about, you know, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And to me, this is really one of those places where I have to remind myself that I don't have that relationship. I am not searching for that relationship, how this is written anymore. We're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character, which means to me, from back in the past, what I would have thought, dear Lord, take this away. Right? Dear Lord, remove this defect of character. And I think that that's a humble move. I think if that works for you, that works, right? But what I'm understanding now over time, right, and I've sort of tried to explain this in this podcast because I'm experiencing this for the first time and sharing it with everybody, right? This real transition of this guy searching for a God to fix all my stuff, right? And transitioning over to a guy through these steps has identified and removed all of the fear from my life, right? Identified how much self plays in my life, identified how much when fear comes into my life, it's usually self that's afraid, right? So trying to remove self from my life at the same time removes fear, right? And finding that I really like that place, right? I like that place of peace. I like that place of just freedom, right? And then when a character defect starts to creep back in and create fear, I don't like that place. And so I have to address that so that I can go back to this place of being free of fear. And, you know, I've said this before, the relationship I had with God, or the relationship I searched for, was this helping, fixing, repair, save my ass God. And today, the relationship that I have with God today is one of love and peace and free of fear, right? I'm not afraid. When I'm not afraid, I live in this place, right? It's all good, happiness, joyous, and free. And to me, that is God. Interesting side note. I saw this guy on a podcast talk about how he felt like God was everything and we're all plugged in, right? We're just plugged into God. maybe that is the case. I don't know. But I know for me, it's just a place of freedom, of fear and, you know, character defects, right? And so, you know, when I read this now, today, it's completely different for me. You know, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, and God for me is that place of peace. So the place of peace, which I've come to like, right? I've come to like, it's like having a brand new car with a flat wheel, right? I love this car, right? And I want to keep this car, and I want to keep driving this car, right? But this character defect of this car, which is a flat tire, right, is stopping me from enjoying. I'm just using a car as an example. It's not about self, right? Oh, the greatest car. I'm just saying, I love the life I have, right? And, you know, I don't allow crazy people into my life. I don't allow drinkers or druggers or, you know, people that are continuing to live that life into my life, right? Because it disrupts it. Then I'm like, God, is this guy going to steal from me? I mean, whatever it is we think, right? Where is this going to go? And fear starts creeping in. I don't want that, right? I do help. I'll help an alcoholic. I'll do whatever I can. But we're not doing it in my living room, right? We're not doing it in my living room. Now, that doesn't mean I don't have people in recovery to my house and I go to other people's houses. But you know what I'm saying? You get what I'm saying? It's about, you know, I want to maintain this God, right? And so to continue to have this thing I call God, which to me is more of a lifestyle, right? Instead of a person in the clouds, it's more of a lifestyle. It's a way of life. It's a way of life for my kids and my wife and my, you know, our whole family, right? My kids don't come home in fear of Dad, right? My kids don't get off the bus going, I wonder what's going to happen today, right? They don't live in that fear. They live in a place of peace, right? Now, when they get to school, right, and they have anxiety and fear, they have the ability to fix that by what? Doing the work, paying attention, following directions, staying out of trouble, right? Just like me in my life. And if they do those things, they can live in a place of peace. But, you know, my kids don't always do that. None of us did, right? That's our first, you know, that's my first example of living in fear. Right? School. My whole life has been filled with fear, right? And that's one of the things I'm realizing, and I've said it, and I won't say it over and over again, but I will say that I've had a lot of it, and I don't like it. I don't like living in fear today. And so I just think it's interesting how I used to read this, and this just shows how I'm trying to transition from this self-centered person to, you know, expect this God to fix everything, right? God. Where really what it is over the process of doing these steps over time and working with a sponsor and going to a lot of meetings and having ups and downs and moments of humility and moments of humiliation, right, and embarrassment and congratulations, all of the stuff that comes along on the path of time to get to this point where now I realize that it's just this place of peace-free. I'm peace-free, man, right? And when a character defect shows back up, it's not like I need to have a conversation with God. I want to continue this established place of peace, and I address it, right? So the peace and the love that I feel today and the freedom of fear is what pushes me to address my character defects more than just asking for someone to help me. I don't know if that makes any sense. I probably said that way too many words to describe that. It's hard to describe. It is very hard to describe what this transition is happening with me. And I don't describe it because I want you people to find it and not, there, like I said the other day, there is no shortcut, right? This is just sort of where I'm ending up, right? But there's, you know, and that was kind of the thing I was talking about, time. I've just had to go through just time, right? Moments where I've said things and been embarrassed, and I've said things and people have said, man, you're so smart. And I've said things and, you know, do this and you're so good at that. And my God, you're terrible at this. And all of the emotional ups and downs of just trudging the road of whatever, right? And moments where I don't want to do this anymore. And I'm so grateful that I do this and, you know, drinking and coming back and, you know, drinking and then realizing I can't quit again. And then somehow finding the miracle and then really addressing my biggest problems and getting to this point. It's just been such a journey. I can't give back one day. I needed all of them to get here. Right. And tomorrow may be different. I may not feel the same tomorrow. Right. But it's just a journey. And I'm just so grateful for it. And I just love, you know, because today I have, like, I feel like I can, the relationship today that I have with God, I can manage it. Right. I know what to do to maintain it. I didn't know what to do to maintain a relationship with the God that I was searching, the fixing foxhole prayer God. I didn't know how to manage. I didn't know how to establish it. I didn't know how to manage it. Today, I understand, for me, this place of just being free of fear. I know how to manage it. And how did I learn? Through these steps. And I've said that before. These steps really teach us how to remove fear out of our life. There isn't one word in this book that tells me how to stop drinking if I've picked up the bottle. There ain't one word. This is a program to find serenity, to be free of fear, not to tell you, hey, if you're thinking of drinking, don't. There's the first suggestion, right? And if you're going to pick up the bottle, then call me the next day. There isn't a lot that can be done. You know, the fifth step talks about humility. The word that shows up before we get sober, usually humiliation. Right? Humiliation, complete ego devastation. The window opens up and we have that opportunity to jump out and hopefully grab onto the Serenity train or that boat headed over to Serenity Island and it gets us there. All right. Let me see. I'm going to just read this daily reflection and then I'm going to go. Big Sam comes home today. Looking forward to seeing him. We got a fish tank. So fun. All right. Let's see. Today's daily reflection. Ooh, G-O-D. Good orderly direction. It's weird how that happens. All right, March 11th. It is when we try to make our will conform with God's that we begin to use it rightly. To all of us, this was a most wonderful revelation. Our whole trouble had been the misuse of willpower. We had tried to bombard our problems with it instead of attempting to bring it into agreement with God's intention for us. To make this increasingly possible is the purpose of AA's 12 steps, and step 3 opens the door. Yeah, 12 steps, 12 traditions. All I have to do is look back at my past to see where my self-will has led me. I just don't know what's best for me, and I believe my higher power does. G-O-D, which I define as good orderly direction, has never let me down. But I have let myself down quite often. Using my self-will in a situation usually has the same result as forcing the wrong piece into a jigsaw puzzle, exhaustion and frustration. Step 3 opens the door to the rest of the program. When I ask God for guidance, I know that whatever happens is the best possible situation. Things are exactly as they are supposed to be, even if they aren't what I want to expect. God does for me what I cannot do for myself if I let him. So true, so true. I've talked about it. I'm not gonna get into it. But the third step is fucking amazing. I love the third step, and honestly, I didn't realize the third step what it meant for a long time, and it's not been just but a few years where I started understanding right this real. And of course, you know, those guys, Joe and Charlie, right? Listen to Joe and Charlie. I heard that them explanation of the third step, and I was like, oh, I get it, right? I do like the idea of asking God, but to me, for today, it's like, you know, it's not as much asking God as, you know, recognizing the fear that comes from it. And, you know, I have options to do decisions all day, choices all day. I can either do this or I can do that. And on each side of that decision, there is a consequence or, you know, a result, right? And when I choose the wrong one, man, it creates fear immediately. Immediately, whether it's like, oh, someone's going to be disappointed. Oh, you said you're like today. I was supposed to have a meeting with my buddy Terry, right? And I said, yeah, I'll meet you on Monday. And then I went and had breakfast with my dad and did a few other things. And I was like, I don't feel like going to meet Terry, right? I'm going to go home. I texted him. I said, I'm going to go home for a little bit. And then I was like, if I don't meet him, I started having fear. Is he going to think I'm a flake? Right. I started to live in it. And I'm like, nope. I text Terry. I said, I'm going to come over. And he said, come on down. Right. And now I did it. And I don't have to live with that shit all night. Right. That regret of not meeting my buddy Terry, who was going to take time to meet me. So anyway, listen, went a little long. Hope. Thanks for letting me share. Appreciate it. Hope everyone has a great day and we'll catch you later. Bye.